told about something this morning. I personally believe that will greatly, if we internalize this, will greatly improve our ability in our relationships with people, children, husbands, employers, friends. Enormously helpful. I actually have a very interesting story, which is prototype for many things that happen. People are close, they try to help each other, and instead of the situation improving, it becomes a war. And what's the story? We have a story of this week's Parsha. Avram and Sarah are married for 10 years. They don't have any children. And Sarah comes up with the suggestion that Avram should live with Hagar, her servant, and through her have a child. Sarah will have a child through her. And Avram listens to his wife. He impregnates her. As soon as she becomes pregnant, Hagar, she starts denigrating Sarah. Starts putting Sarah down. And Sarah strikes out at Avram and says, "I'm furious with you. I gave you my maid, and when I became pregnant, she puts me down. When she became pregnant, she started putting me down. Hashem should judge me and you." Which means that it started off as a very nice thing, and all of a sudden, now this becomes a war. Now the house has become a war zone. Sarah and Avram, instead of this, they're now at odds with each other and angry at each other. She's angry at him. So Avram says, "Listen, she's yours, do what you want with her." So the Torah says, "V'ta'aneha Sarai." Sarah, ta'aneha is probably good translation, abused. Sarah starts abusing her. And she runs away. Hagar runs away from Sarah because she's running away from this abuse. An angel finds her by a well. And where'd you come from? And he tells the story, "I ran away from Sarah." And the angel answers her, "Return to your mistress and take abuse under her hands." And then another angel says, "Look, she'll have children." So my question is a very simple question. Hagar runs away because she feels abused, right? And now all of a sudden the angel says, "Go back and take abuse." She can't handle it. If she could handle it, she could have stayed. Well, what's the angel telling her? Go back and take abuse. Go back and take abuse. She doesn't want abuse. She was close to Avram, Hagar, and now all of a sudden she doesn't want to take any abuse. Number one. Number two, what does it mean that Sarah, our mother Sarah, abuses this person? What does that mean? Torah says she's abusing Hagar. How could Hagar upset her? I understand. She put her down, therefore she abuses her. I wouldn't like to think that our mother Sarah abuses people. Especially, she's her maid. Okay, but you're not supposed to abuse your maid either. So I actually saw, I think, that the Targum Unklus in his translation is bothered by the first question. Hashem said, it says that she ran away because Sarah was abusing her, and then the angel says, "Go back and take abuse." So he actually translates the word, the same word in Hebrew, abuse, differently both times. The first time, when it says Sarah abused her, he translated va'anise, which means he abused her. Sarah abused Hagar. The second time, when the angel tells her to go back, v'is'ani, and take the abuse, so there, Unklus translates it differently. He translates it, ishtabdi, work for her. The same word, which I think that's what's bothering him in the sentence. What are you telling me? Go back and take abuse. She ran away from the abuse. No, go back and work for her. Go back and work for her. That's the way Unklus translates it. The difficulty with it is the sentence in Hebrew uses exactly the same word. Use the word abuse both times. So, good, you have a problem, so you're saying it doesn't mean it the second time. But the Torah could have yet used a different word in Hebrew also to give. What is going on here? You see, he's bothered with that question. She's abused by Sarah. She runs away. The angel says, "Go back and take abuse." So he says, even though it's the same word in Hebrew, the second time it doesn't mean take abuse, it means go work for Sarah. Sarah abused her. She runs away, and the angel says, "Go back and work for her, not go back and abuse her." That's the way he translates it. But the word in Hebrew is abuse both of them. So I think this is probably will be one of the most helpful lessons that we'll ever. learn together. It's a fascinating thing here. What was the argument between Sarah and Abraham? What was he doing wrong that she blamed him? Well, what's the whole issue here? Sarah says, take my, live with Hagar, and after she becomes pregnant, Hagar starts putting Sarah down. See, I'm more righteous. You never had any children. Puts it down. And Sarah blames Abraham for it. What's she blaming Abraham for? What's the whole storyline here? They didn't have any children. It's Sarah's suggestion, give me your maid. Gets the maid. She becomes pregnant. The maid puts down Sarah. And Sarah is now angry at Abraham. What's the storyline here? The obvious storyline is like this. The simple translation of the storyline is that what was supposed to be the relationship between Abraham and Hagar? Abraham and Sarah are married. Avram and Sarah are married. They don't have any children. Hagar wants, Sarah wants that Hagar, the maid, should be like a, what do they call that today? A surrogate mother. That's what she wants, to be a surrogate mother. surrogate mother, very good. He should be a surrogate mother, right? That's what she wants. What did Avram do wrong? It must be Avram was not treating her as a baby machine, but giving her the respect like wife number two. Right? He's treating her like not just a woman to have a baby with. It wants to give her more respect, and therefore Sarah is furious. I say she's a baby making machine, and you're treating her like wife number two. There was an enormous amount of fury and anger. That's the storyline for sure. That's why she gets angry at her husband. Otherwise, what's she angry at her husband for? It was her suggestion to go ahead and take Hagar. He took Hagar, and then you're angry at him because you got pregnant. That's what you gave him for. You gave him for. The answer is, I wanted her, Hagar, Sarah says, I wanted her to be a baby-making machine. And he treated her more than a baby. If he would have treated her like a baby-making machine, she wouldn't open up her mouth to me. The answer is, he's treating her with more respect, and therefore, she's furious at him. And then the Torah says, Sarah abused Hagar. Where does it come that sorry men should abuse anybody? It's horrendous. The Torah is telling us an unbelievable thing here. It really will change our lives. It's just going to take a lot of work to apply it. What is the definition of abuse? What's the definition of abuse? Does that mean that Sarah started beating her? If she beat her, tortured her? Couldn't do that. Psychologically abused her? This is a, one of our mothers would do that? The answer is, she treated her like a maid. In her mind, what did Hagar think she was? A wife. If you believe yourself to be a wife, and somebody treats you like a maid, you're getting abuse. Which comes out a fascinating thing to me. That all abuse is no, there's very, I mean, there's some things that are in general abuse. Yeah. You torture a person, right? Maim them. But very often, what abuse is really a question of perspective. What do you think is the relationship, and how are you being treated based on what you think? If based on what you think, you're not being treated the way you would like to be think, you're being abused. But in reality, you may not be being abused at all because maybe you don't have the right perception of what the relationship is. The Torah is not saying that Sarah was abusive. The Sarah was abusive because she perceived herself to be a wife. You speak to the wife and say, listen, I want you to bring me a cup of coffee. You're abusing me. And she said, I'm running away from this abuse. Which means that almost all abuse is really a function of what you think is the relationship is and what the relationship should be. Think of an example. Almost every employer and employee has a different perspective. The employer thinks the employee is not working hard enough. I'm overpaying. Every employee in the world thinks he's being underpaid. When you have those two different perspectives, when the employer asks you, He's already underpaying you. And he asked you, I'd like to come on Sunday. I'd like you to stay an extra hour. How do you feel?
Abused.
The employer says, I'm overpaying the guy anyway. I want him an extra hour here. I'm not abusing him at all. And it's true that there's no question that the employee feels abused, because the employee feels that they're doing more than they should be to begin with. The employer says, you're not doing enough, and I'm really giving you an opportunity to be able to hold your head up high instead of just taking charity from me. Abuse will always depend on what you think the relationship ought to be. But now let me take it to a higher level. What happens now when you... Let's talk about in a marriage. We all have expectations of how we should speak to our spouse and how they should speak to us. We have certain expectations how what should be proper communication. We have expectations. And what happens? My husband talks down to me. I feel abused. Yeah. It could be he made a mistake. So now what do I do? Once I feel put down, so what's the normal reaction? Besides you get angry, what do?
I won't cook for you.
that was before he abused you. You know what we all do? Almost everybody does this. What do we do? I'm talking about what goes on in our heads. You know what goes on in our heads? When somebody hurts you, what do you feel should be done?
He has to make it up to you.
When somebody insults you, you feel they owe you an apology. They have to make it up. So you know what you do? You raise the bar. What happens in every relationship, when somebody talks down to you, what you do is you raise the bar. And now you raise the bar, now you have a higher expectation, because they did something wrong. They now not only do they have to treat you nice, but they got to treat you with kid gloves. Let's say someone comes and apologizes to you. They actually come and apologize. Do they talk the way they always talk, or is that always with more respect? Right? And an apology is with more respect. Now, when you're awaiting the apology, that means you're waiting to get more respect. So what you do is you raise the bar. Now you have to be nice, doubly nice to him. Maybe he'll get a present. Maybe some flowers. Maybe it'll be a trip. And now when you don't get that, you're now further abused. Now if the husband goes back to speaking to you the way he spoke to you normally, now you're right further abused, because the bar has been raised. And as the bar has been raised, the abuse gets more and more too. Abuse is a function of perspective. If normally there was a certain level of communication, and all of a sudden the husband did something... Should I take the other example? The husband did something wrong, right? No, we don't. And now, when he did something wrong, so now I expected him to come home with a gift, and I expect him to come home with an apology, with a note, with a trip, something touching, and I didn't get that. And I expected that. So now the bar has been raised. You know what? I don't seem to give this class. I think you can give the class better than me. So now when he comes home, and he treats you the way he did, you're even more abused. Even when he's not abusive, you're abusive, because abuse is a function of what your perspective is. And therefore, abuse, I don't know, he didn't apologize for this. And then now, if he apologizes a week later, the bar is so high that the apology doesn't even matter. Because for that level, it's even more and more and more. Which means that if we start viewing that abuse is usually not a... some objective abuse, but when most of us talk about, when abusive relationship, anybody's done marriage, call an abusive relationship. Well, abusive, I'm an abusive relationship. He's abusing me. Hey, there's no such thing. He's beating you, something else. It's not such thing. You do it to him. He does. What happened is that you had an expectation. He raised his voice, so that became very abusive. One time he raised his voice, I can't handle that. Or he says the same thing. What has to be done is exactly the opposite. And this is very, very hard to do. This is hard, but if you want any relationship ever to work out, this is in my opinion, this is the basis of working out. And anyone who does marriage counseling will tell you this is the basis of working it out. Is exactly the opposite. If one person is abusive, you know what you gotta do? You gotta lower the bar. You lower the bar. And now the expectations become lower. And he forgot flowers, he didn't apologize, I wasn't expecting it. And therefore, he's still gruff. I can live with that. if you have a lower expectation, you can live with that. And then after a while, it's good. And on this level, we're able to get along because I don't have an unreasonable expectation. I'm dealing with what the a lot of women will do this on their own. They'll be smart enough. I thought he would be this. He's not this. So if I raise the bar, it's going to be a divorce. So some women will be smart enough. And they'll say, I better lower the bar, get my head set straight. You know, when he's mean or... I mean, again, we're not talking about physical or really, really serious verbal abuse. We're talking about he's not polite, he's not nice, open the door, where's breakfast. You know, the normal kind of things that are tolerable if you don't expect more. I lower the bar, and then the relationship is now stable. That doesn't mean you should leave it at that, but after it's stabilized, then you can begin communication. Some a third person helps, or maybe by that time, if there's no fighting going on and you're not angry, now you know what? We used to have such a nicer relationship. We're getting along fine. No, it's really nicer. We're so much nicer when we're respectful to each other. When I open the door for you, or you made breakfast for me, or when I, you know, it was really much nicer that way. Maybe we should lift up the bar. But that should be done after it's stabilized. The way to deal with any abusive relationship is to give up your expectations. Again, I'm not talking about objective abuse. I'm talking about subjective abuse. And most abuse, sorry, is subjective abuse. It's based on Hugger's understanding that she's not a maid, but she's a wife, that she feels terribly abused. But if she's a maid, and it certainly was Sarah's understanding she was a maid. And that's what the angel actually said to her. The angel said to her, go back and take abuse. What does it mean? Go back and take exactly what you took before. Exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. It's the same word in Hebrew. The Aramaic translation is different. You know what? He says, but you're going to go back with a different perspective. And therefore, it's not going to be abuse. Sarah's not changing one iota. But you go back in your head and realize that you are in fact Sarah's maid. Go back and recognize you're Sarah's maid, and at that point you will know you're not going to feel abused. So when Sarah says, I want my coffee in the morning, you're not going to feel abused. The angel is telling us the Torah tongue is a fascinating thing. Sarah's behavior to her is not going to change one iota. So our question was, it's not going to change something. What the angel told her, the behavior is not going to change. What's going to change is her perspective. What's going to change is Hagar's perspective on the relationship. Until now, you think your wife number two. You're not a wife. You're a maid. You were her maid. You're still a maid. Go back and recognize you're a maid, and you're going to have children. You're going to be a great nation. Whatever it is. But go back and recognize you're a maid. If you go back and recognize you're a maid, everything that Sarah's going to do to you is going to be exactly what it was before. But it's not going to be abusive. That's why Onkelos translates, and you work for her. The same word in Hebrew, go back and take abuse, and he changes the translation. He changes it from abuse to work. The answer is, the actions aren't going to change. Your perspective is going to change, and therefore you're not going to feel any abuse. Therefore, you're not going to feel any abuse. Abuse is a function of perspective. If a person feels a relationship ought to be at a high level, then anything less than that is abuse. If a person feels the relationship is usually at a more realistic level, it's not abusive. It's not abusive. What's changing here is not the behavior. What's changing here is the perspective. And most problems that we have in life are because we have the wrong perspective. And therefore we feel very, very abused. A drush I gave at a wedding a little while ago. There was a couple that was enormous problems, not between the bride and the groom, between the parents. War. The parents aren't coming to the wedding. Nobody should know. War. I mean, the day before they weren't coming to the wedding. I mean, of course, you understand, Machatonim weren't getting along either. It was a horrible situation. I'll tell you what I said. I was marrying this couple, and I said under the chuppah. I said, there's one recorded sermon under chuppah at a wedding in the Talmud. Only one. And it's exactly a six-word sermon. First minute, Rabbi, I got to talk short. The second part of that message is, we never knew if the rabbi was asked to speak again. But what he said was the following six words: woe, we're going to die, woe, we're going to die. This was the message that the rabbi said under the chuppah. Woe, we're going to die, woe, we're going to die. Just imagine, think of the beautiful couple that's standing here, and all the love that's emanating, these wonderful parents. And I know the girl for this many years, instead of the normal stuff here, he said six words, woe, we're going to die. So what is Talmud telling us? Talmud's telling us like this. He's giving them the formula for a happy marriage, or for a happy wedding, in fact. He's giving them the formula for a happy wedding. Now, when the time our children were young, we're already looking forward to making a wedding for them. Children themselves are already many years looking forward to a wedding, you know, with their parents and grandparents. If you start with that perspective, you're going to have a very unhappy wedding. A, who says your grandparents are going to be alive? B, who says your parents are going to be alive? Who says? Who says even you're going to make it to the wedding? If that's your expectation, it's very unlikely that this is going to be a happy, and they lived, and put it like that, and the expectation, they lived happily ever after, is part of your expectation, that's unlikely you're going to have a happy wedding, and unlikely you're going to have a happy ever after. The perspective has to be the opposite. I hope to get married, but you know, who knows? I may not make it, the Kala may not make it, my parents may not be here, my grandparents may not be here, my siblings may not all be here. If I start with that, and then somebody shows up to the wedding, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. The perspective on life is what bar we set. If we start with a high bar, that's a formula for unhappiness. You set with a high bar, you know, we're going to live, you know, we're never going to raise our voice at each other, we're going to live an idyllic life. You're going to be in marriage counseling in 6 months. If you start, the rabbi is giving an enormously healthy formula. You start that, I didn't have to find the most wonderful woman. Maybe I wouldn't find my Bashir. That's possible. Number two, maybe my parents won't merit to take me to the chuppah. Maybe my siblings won't be there. Maybe his parents won't be there. Maybe the grandparents won't be there. If I start with that perspective, then anything that happens is something to be grateful for, and something to appreciate, and something to enjoy. Most things in life, how I view things sets the tone of whether I'm going to be happy, whether it's going to be good, whether it's going to be miserable. It has very little to do with the reality of what's actually going on. It has to do with what my expectations are. My expectations are that he's always going to treat me like a queen. That's going to be a disaster. My expectations are more realistic and he treats me like a queen, I'm delighted and thrilled. And if sometimes he doesn't treat me, I can live with that also. But if my expectation is to be treated like the queen, he's abusing me right away. He's abusing me, and I can't stand abuse. We are our worst enemies in establishing abuse. Because abuse usually has to do with my mindset, the way you ought to treat me. His mindset may be different than that. And if it's different, the employer feels abused that the employee is getting too much money, and the employee feels abused that he's not getting paid enough. Instead of saying, having a more realistic approach, you have two unhappy, miserable people, angry at each other, constantly angry, constantly trying to take advantage of each other. Whereas if you set a more realistic bar, then you can have a happier work atmosphere. But we have to have that is something you can do yourself. Sarah, the angel, is telling her, change your bar. Your perspective is wrong. Sarah's behavior isn't changing here. But if you change your mindset, you're not going to be unhappy. What you considered abuse before, what's that going to be? It's going to be work. That's all it is. It went from abuse to work. The Targum translated the first time abuse, the same word in Hebrew. The angel says, go back and be abused. The Targum says, go back and work. Nothing changed. The only thing that changed is what was in your head. And unfortunately, most of us do exactly the opposite. Instead of lowering the bar, we raise the bar, and then what was abuse becomes terribly. Two, I really feel, I'm not saying a person makes up in court, he's abusing me terribly. I am so abused, and I feel abused, and I feel an emotional wreck. I say, it's all true. But it's all true what you did to yourself. You put that in your head. You set up these unreasonable bars, and you kept on raising them, so you feel totally, totally abused. And you're miserable because you're so abused. I'm not minimizing the misery of abuse. I'm just saying abuse was a function of what your expectation was. Almost everything in life depends on us to set for ourselves the proper expectation. By the way, it's the same thing with parnasa too. Exactly the same thing with our livelihood. The Torah tells us, almost one of the most unbelievable things, the Torah tells us a fact. The Jewish people were unhappy, even though they have almost everything their heart could desire. They're living in Israel. They're living in a society that we refuse to let take converts in because we're afraid that everybody was converting because it was wonderful to be a Jew. Time of King Solomon, there was an enormous amount of wealth, success, power, prestige to being a Jew, and people were converting because it's good to be Jewish. The time of the first temple, and what happened was we were miserable. We're miserable. What are we unhappy about? We have almost everything. And we all know, we look around the room and we know people here and people that are not here, fabulous houses, $500,000 of cars in front of their house. Their income taxes, their real estate taxes are parnasa for a person. People in Miami Beach said their real estate tax would be on their house would be, a parnasa for a young couple or maybe one child. Real estate tax. They're not happy. It's not how much you have, it's what your expectations are. You set for yourself, and you are unhappy. I'm not taking away from the fact you're unhappy, but the unhappiness is a function of your expectations. Parnasa, happiness. That's about relationships. It's also in relationships the same thing. I'm not talking besides the abuse level. Do I have a good friend? What are my expectations from a friend? If you have unreasonable expectations, that's not really a good friend. Then afterwards you get angry at the person. Instead of having a more realistic expectation, or better than that, there's almost no expectation. Whoa, we're going to die, whoa, we're going to die. And a person does you a favor, you feel so thrilled because you had no expectations. We are our worst enemies. We set such unreasonable expectations that we have trouble getting along with people. We have trouble living with people. And we go out miserable. But it has nothing to do usually with the reality. And when the person remarries, they have a good relationship. The person wasn't a bad person. You knew them before. You're okay with them. They're okay with you. They didn't change that much. And yet here you are totally miserable. 6 months after you're married, you're totally miserable. And it's just getting worse and worse. Person changed. If you knew him a year before, nothing really changed. The change was that you now gotten to a level, a new relationship, where you had such high, unreasonable expectations that you've made yourself miserable. What we have to do is learn how to change our expectations. The best, 100% the best, is to begin with the expectation, zero expectations. Whoa, we're going to die. Whoa, we're going to die. That's a very profound message to give somebody under the chuppah and for it's a life message. That doesn't mean you remain with that. You have zero, but then as that becomes good at the lowest level, then you begin raising the bar together. You agree on a unified, you know what, we're going to start doing this. Go a little, another 6 months, we'll start. If that's the way it works, then it's not unreasonable. Then we've agreed, we're setting it together, and that's fine. But to one person unilaterally have their own perspective, that's a formula for disaster. Hugger was miserable. She ran away. I mean, she ran away from a fabulously wealthy home. She ran because she has a mistress that's abusing her. Angel said, go back. It's no problem to go. Nothing changed. Sarah's behavior is not changing. Nothing is changing. You know what's changing? Her head is changing. I have to realize what the reality of the relationship is. I'm her maidservant. And everything is clear. And there's no abuse here. The same thing is not abusive. It's not abusive, but we live in this world of giving ourselves false expectations. Phony, false, but worse, unilateral expectations. You sit down with somebody you're close to and you love and you start discussing, let's together work out a bar. And don't make it too high, because you know what the reality is. Goes good, raise them. Or it'll automatically sort of become raised. You'll grow in your respect and your fondness for each other, so it'll automatically become raised. But don't unilaterally set expectations. Setting unilateral expectations is a formula for disaster in everything. Wealth, relationships, our children, everything. And this is probably to me one of the most important messages in life, because nothing works well. You have unreasonable expectations from your children, they're not going to marry who I want, I'm over my dead body, then you don't show up at the wedding. You got to fight. Got a fight? I forgot you were fighting with your mother about the same thing.
I think besides being a rabbi, you're a psychologist. Because that's very important.
This is the beginning of living. This is being a Jew. This is being a person, a mensch. This is beginning to set for ourselves much more reasonable expectations. You know, I keep on hearing the word, and we feel so abused. I mean, I don't mean that people don't feel, they feel terribly abused. I mean, you sit down there, it's taking me 3 hours to figure out what is the problem over here that they feel abused. Raised his voice. She raised. What do you think we are? You know, we became angels all of a sudden. Human beings. You know, you have to get into a person's head. What they expected, what they were, their unrealistic dreams were. That's not a relationship. And that's what I wanted to say. And I think it's a very, very important message. And that's, I think, the whole story here. That's exactly the storyline here. Hagar was, Sarah was not an abusive person. Well, first, the whole, what we see in the Torah again is, Sarah is furious at her husband. Because Hagar is insulting her, why is she furious at her husband? The answer has to be that Sarah says she's my maid, and you're treating her like a wife. That's what's going on here. But that also tells us what's in Hagar's head. Hagar is this, my husband's, Avram's treating me like I'm a wife. And he's setting the tone in this house. And Sarah's treating me like a maid. She's abusing me. And from this abuse, she runs away. She runs away. The angel says, making a mistake. Go back. You can live with what she's treating you as fine. You can live with that. The only reason you can't live with that is because you decided you're a wife. You're not a wife. You're her maid. She was not abusive. Sarah was not an abusive person. Our mothers are not abusive. But that doesn't mean you have to treat a maid like she's a maid. You still expect her to come and bring you coffee in the morning, so to make the beds and do the laundry. That's what you expect her to do. That's what you expect her to do. She says, I'm the other wife. It's not my job. You do it. Or, you know, well, let's hire somebody to do it. She wasn't doing anything abusive to her. It was just in her head.
Rabbi, how about Abraham's behavior? Was it correct to treat her as a wife? Or was that a lack of respect for Sarah?
Well, his understanding is, and it's likely to be, that's really what Sarah wanted her. What originally she wanted him to do.
I know, but did he?
I'm saying, no, that Sarah originally wanted her, actually, to be a wife. I'll tell you why I think so. He says, I can't have any children. Marry my, take my maid, and I'll have children. Baby making machine. Sarah, Avram listens to Sarah. And then it says like this. Sarah, the wife of Abraham, took Hagar, the Egyptian woman, her maid, at the end of 10 years, and she gave her to Abraham, her husband, for him for a wife.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. For him, for a wife.
So for him, it was all right to treat her as a wife.
That's what he understood, and initially, that's probably what Sarah wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But
changed
her mind, or she realized that she's, in other words, she's my maid, but you can treat her like a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she started thinking she's a wife.
Yeah, I understand.
What happened like this? She became pregnant, and Sarah was so upset by the fact that she was being put down, denigrated by Hagar, that somehow her gave her an eye that she lost the baby. So she miscarried. Hagar miscarried. Hagar then escapes from the abuse. The angel meets her and says, go back and get abused. And what you're saying means go back and take this behavior, which you will not sense abusive, and you're going to have a child. And she goes back, and then she has the child, and that child then becomes Yishmael. And next week, as the child begins growing up, and then Sarah has her own child. That's the second stage of this drama.
How do you balance the lowering of the bar and being positive in life?
Well, I think the most positive thing is to make the relationship work. So that's a very positive feeling. And you have to realize we're talking about temporary. So this is the what. You have to be realistic. This, assuming there's something wrong. Let's say you started with a higher expectation. Well, one thing for sure, the first thing is never because somebody insults you to raise the bar. And that we almost always do. The second I'm waiting for an apology, then I raise the bar, then it becomes tremendously abusive. So that you have to always never raise the bar because someone didn't do something right to you. Be shocked if they apologize. Instead of being unhappy if they don't apologize, be shocked because people don't generally apologize. So never raise the bar. Okay, now you didn't raise the bar and your husband's still not getting any better. You know what? I could call him on it, but that's who he is. You know what? If I'm unhappy, and he knows I'm unhappy, so all I'm doing is a formula now for a war. And it's going to get, because I'm unhappy, and the way he's treating me, and I'm going to get angry. And it's going to be a war. You know what? Guess who he is? I'm going to lower the bar. Meanwhile, it works. And then, maybe, once something works, there's all that itself becomes the basis for raising the bar.
It sounds so easy to say. Why so expect less? But it really is a very hard thing to do, because recently I heard that getting an insult and not responding in kind is such an extraordinary act that a childless couple can have children if a woman can bring herself to do that.
Let me say,
it must be...
Well, hold on.
It's not easy.
Listen, again, we started here with... If you really got an insult, you're right. But I'm saying most of our insults began with our unreasonable expectations. Hugger herself was furious, but she wasn't really abused. You know, let's say Sarah was beating her. Okay, there's nothing to discuss, right? Somebody's putting her down, you good-for-nothing piece of white trash or something else, too. But she's not talking to her like that. She's giving her a lot of work, so she feels abused. Very often, I think most abuse situations are, if I would not feel that I'm entitled to this, I wouldn't be abused. That's what I'm saying. That's the starting point. That's not that hard. I mean, it's hard after the fact, but if you realize ahead of time that maybe you're setting your sights...
So it's a pride.
Here's an instance. Do your kids call you every day? But if you're expecting it, then they're abusing
you.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, you have to have a more realistic, you know... You're lucky if your husband calls you. If you have it, you need. That's what I'm saying. We need most of the time, most relationships. We need to start the baseline more realistic. We should just start the rabbi's formula. Where we're going to die. Where we're going to die. I expect nothing. I don't know if I'm going to be here. I don't know if he's going to be here. Now, thank God for today.
How does that work in the workplace? Because as you rightly said, no matter how good an employer you are, there is that first premise.
Okay, but I'm saying, but that's in the employer's mind. And that's exactly what I'm saying. The same thing. The employer thinks he's overpaying you. The employee thinks they're being underpaid. Okay, I'm an employee. You know what? If I don't want to be miserable, I'm going to make my mind. At least I'm going to understand he thinks he's overpaying me.
But if I'm your employee, and I quite rightly think that, you know, I'm not going to have any expectations. He's going to think that he's overpaying me. I know he's not, but I'm not going to worry about it. Will that change your attitude towards me?
I would think generally it will, because most people will respond. In other words, which means that when I ask you to stay an extra hour, you're enthusiastic.
By all means.
And, you know,
so then you'll start to have different perspectives on me,
right.
Different perceptions
That's
who I am and how I am.
That's it. And even if I'm not a decent person and I am really an abusive person, it won't bother you, because you'll at least understand who I am.
It'll bother me, but I'll pretend it won't.
What? No. It means you'll understand who I am. You won't take it personally, because you understand that it's my problem instead of your problem. You understand it's my problem instead of your problem. If you really feel that you understand that employers always feel that they're overpaying, then he shouldn't feel that way. But if he does, that's his problem.
What's the difference? Where's the line between expectation and limit? And limit of, lower your expectation versus doormat. Because you can lower your expectations, and then you can just become, I'm lowering my expectations, therefore I never expect anything.
I still think there's an objective standard of abuse. I think there's an objective standard of abuse. Someone starts beating you up, you know, somebody is high strung and, you know, knowing who they are and occasionally losing their temper. That's a normal human being. I mean, once you're in divorce court, you're going to marriage counseling, I mean, every single slip of the tongue is the most horrible abuse. But the truth of the matter is, you know, in human relationships, you yourself have moods, and sometimes you put somebody down or something like that. You know, so they do it it's you. There's a certain realistic. There is a realistic expectation of a person. You know what? Pretend it's not you. If you saw someone else doing that to her husband, would that be abusive? Or her husband doing it to her? Somehow, for other people, it's like someone says, "You know what minor surgery is?" It happens to somebody else. It's a minor problem to somebody. If to somebody else you consider it major abuse, then I think you consider it to yourself. But if it's somebody else, something you're not particularly close to, you know, somebody, you know, saw her husband treating her that way. I've seen some things that I think were like horrendous abuse that I've seen people treat their wives. I mean, horrendous abuse. But a lot of times, you know, I didn't consider it such abusive. You know, sure, if it would have been me, maybe I would have been upset. But so if you look at somebody else and you don't think that that's horrendous, somebody you don't particularly care for, you don't think it's horrendous, then I think that's not making yourself a shmata. That's just being more realistic. Everybody should have a great Shabbos.